Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org.
Wait, do you prefer Ed or Edward?
Ed.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Ed Harrell, you old so-and-so, it's good to see you. How have you been?
I've been well, Brian, for a man of my age and miles.
I'm doing okay. You look great for 25.
Thank you.
I've really got to tell you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to 26.
As we are all. Well, we will celebrate that day. Now, as you can see, we have set aside our traditional Berg Vivant martinis for wine, because today we are talking about the Pittsburgh Wine Festival 2015, of which you are the president.
Yes.
That is quite an honor. I am humbled to be in your presence, because wine is one of my favorite topics.
Well, if you drink enough of it, they may make you president.
Well, I think I'm already a contender. Are you the guy I got to talk to?
Maybe.
If you ever think of retiring, please.
All right.
Please think of me. All right. But you have quite a history with Pittsburgh. You were formerly the president of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review newspaper.
That's correct. Trib Total Media. And we started out when I went to work for them in 92, I believe. It was shortly before the press went on strike.
The Pittsburgh Press?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was one paper, and by the time I retired, however many years ago that was, it seems like forever, but it was probably only about 8. We had 5 dailies, 23 weeklies, and several things on the internet. So
wow.
It was a very nice run. It's always better to build something than to take it apart. So it was a good experience in that sense. I came here in 1982 from Richmond, Virginia, where I worked for Media General. And I lived here ever since, enjoyed it. I don't even have to show my Confederate passport to get in anymore. So
back in the 80s, a little different. Huh?
Yeah. But now I can actually claim to be a local, I think.
We're glad to have you.
I haven't gotten around to yens yet, but I'm trying.
There's time. There's always time for yens. Well, what is the day-to-day operation like for a newspaper president?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, you're always dealing in hurried, rushed things that should have been done yesterday, because the news is a 24-hour cycle, as you know.
Right.
And so you're always dealing with issues that you didn't expect the day before. We have, you know, the organization of just getting a newspaper on somebody's doorstep is daunting. And almost every day you're dealing with people who want to change something, and you have to sit and think about what they want to do.
Yeah.
One thing about working at newspapers that's kind of fun is that there are a lot of creative people there. And bless their hearts, they all have ideas of what we're doing wrong. So you have to hear it out and think about it, and sometimes they're absolutely right, which is good. You also are a very public person when you're sitting there, because you're the lightning rod for whenever something is said or done that they don't like. I've been called a right-wing idiot and a communist on the same day.
Wow. So, and that was just Tuesday.
That was just Tuesday. So you do get a lot of, you are kind of the flat catcher.
Yeah.
So it's never dull.
Now, in this age of digital media, what do you see being the future of newspapers?
I think, certainly for my lifetime, newspapers are always going to be around. I think eventually most things, and that includes commercial television, will go digitally. And newspapers, as you know, are working towards that way. I was looking at the reports today from the New York Times first quarter, and they're up like several hundred thousand in digital subscriptions. So they've got the picture. They're doing the right thing. Now, I still take the New York Times, the paper version, even though I can get it every day on my computer, because I just like sitting back with that old comfortable newspaper.
Right, you got to have something in your hands.
Age. Yeah, that's my age.
Well, I think there are younger people that feel the same.
Perhaps, but I suspect that most of the digit heads involved with this.
Is that a technical term in the publishing industry? Digit heads. Got it.
No, that's something that I was taught by the younger folks that they call themselves that. So, at any rate, that will become the preferred because it is their preferred for so many other things that they do. And with, like any media, you're always following the trends. It's no accident that all the television stations at this point have websites.
Right.
And refer to them. Because I think they see the future. They're going to somehow be probably delivered that way just as we are.
Right.
And more of it's going to be integrated. At one point, we talked about partnerships with television stations where we would actually send our photographers out with video cameras, and we would file stories together, and that still may happen.
Oh. What I would like us to get to is when we can have wine delivered digitally.
I hope that doesn't happen. I really honestly...
Well, to like, I could download a bottle okay, at my house. Right. No, not delivered into me digitally. No, delivered, to my glass.
Well, that might work. I don't know. But it might have a little adverse effect on the grapes.
True. Now, you are essentially one of the founders, or the founder of the Pittsburgh Wine Festival.
Yes. I decided we'd like to do it and drove to Harrisburg and met... fellow who was then head of the PLCB, Jonathan Newman. And I've dealt with Harrisburg quite a bit in my role at the newspaper,
yeah.
So I expected someone to contemplate this for 2 years and decide it was too much work or something.
Yeah, our liquor laws in Pennsylvania, I think they're still left over from the Pilgrims.
Well, the Pilgrims didn't drink, but... and maybe that is a reflection. But anyway, Jonathan, when I said, let's have a wine festival in Pittsburgh, he just looked at me and said, when do you want to do it?
Wow.
And so it was born that day and delivered about 9 months later, proper gestation period.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, so, this was while you were still at the Trib?
Yeah. And so when I left the Trib, I make that sound like something other than retiring, but when I retired from the Trib, I asked if I could take it with me, and they graciously said yes. Now I find myself as president of the Pittsburgh Wine Festival, and we also do a whiskey festival.
Oh, now see, I didn't know that was you too, the whiskey festival.
You know, we're almost the poster boy for AA.
Keep on going. Well... But there's nothing like it in this region, certainly.
Nothing this size. Yeah. We expect about 3,000 people each year. And we have over 600 wines being poured from 28 countries. So it's It, the logistics of it is more difficult than a lot of people might think.
But well, how does that work? Do you just kind of reach out to wineries around the globe and say, hey, we're having this big party in Pittsburgh, come on down? And
well, with the help of the Liquor Control Board, we do that. They, of course, have contacts with all those people, but they buy through them. And so we lean on them to help us get the people here. But yes, that's really how it's done. But we're fortunate in that we have such a good reputation that we are in the position of usually of declining people.
Wow.
Because frankly, you know, I can't take any more space in the vineyard. I don't want it to appear so crowded that people have a bad time.
Right, right.
So if 600 wines aren't enough, see me later.
I may, for 601. Wow. So now, are they permitted to sell bottles of their wine while they're at the festival, or just sample?
Well, another thing unique about this festival is we set a wine store up. We don't, but the PLCB sets up a wine store there. And when you're tasting something, if you're interested, you can get a slip of paper and you take it back to the wine store and you can buy it, you can take it home, or they will deliver it to the store near you where you can pick it up.
So. Yeah, there's always seems to be a way with Pennsylvania's, you know, laws that you can kind of figure it out. It's a little circuitous.
Well, Pennsylvania's laws are much maligned.
I've heard two sides, because now they're thinking of trying to change it and privatize it. So what do you think?
I think that I'm not against privatization, but I don't think our system is that bad. Our system, with some tweaking, I think could be pretty outstanding. If we could give a few licenses to some people who have a real interest in building wine, that would be... that would really help. But the current bills, both of them have so many flaws that you heard it here first. If those bills are passed, prices will go up 25%. The state will not make the revenue that it makes now, so they'll have to find taxes somewhere else. And the variety that you now enjoy, you will disappear because neither of these bills were written by anybody who knew anything about wine.
They were written by politicians need to drink more, is what I think you're saying.
Well, I think they need to talk to somebody who might know something about how wine is bought and sold. Mm-hmm. And I understand why at least the Terzai bill was written the way it was, because they want to give licenses, first of all, to beer distributors. And why? Because beer distributors contribute to local elections. But they don't know a thing about wine. So, and then the other part of that is they have excluded some of the biggest wine dealers in the country from being able to sell in Pennsylvania, like Costco or Sam's Club.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the guys that sell wine today everywhere else. So the bill's bad. It's really there because they've screwed up the budget so badly that they want to sell the current stores and think they can make enough to make up the difference. Jeez. But it's just not going to work that way, I can tell you.
What's your prediction? How do you think it'll go? What'll happen?
It with Harrisburg, you never know.
You never know.
I wouldn't dare to predict, but I will say that the chopping, the guy they beat on all the time, which is the PLCB, is a totally wrong guy. The PLCB enforces what the legislature demands.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hardworking, honest people. And they're getting a bad rap every time their convenient scapegoat. So media just calls them out as the problem, but they're not the problem. The legislature's the
problem.
It's
good to hear that side of it. And I ask this completely without jest. Have you ever considered running for public office?
Yes, but I I came to my senses.
And invested in wine instead, which I think is...
Well, you know, if they drop the big one, I have a basement full. I'm just
good. You're good.
I'm good. I just get
You're good. You're prepared. That's wise. I like that. Now, it seems to me that something like this has really enhanced the Pittsburgh food landscape, because in a lot of ways, Pittsburgh has been considered beer in a shot town. But
when I first moved here in 1982, Richmond was not exactly forward thinking in this stuff, but I was shocked at how little wine you found in restaurants. The lesser quality of the restaurants were surprising to me. Mm-hmm. I really thought I was moving north. North to a southern boy meant kind of sophistication that we might not have.
Yeah.
So it was a little shocking when I got here. But I have to say, I'm so delighted with the way restaurants are growing here. People are taking an interest in wine and food. And I don't know any place today that you have more variety in all of these things than you do in Pittsburgh. It's just been an evolution that's been wonderful to watch.
So, in a sense, if you don't like the landscape, change it, improve it.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
I think that about everything. And bring things to get involved. So, when I got here, I was very fortunate. I got asked to participate in a lot of things, and I said yes. I've enjoyed that period of time. I've always loved things to do with the arts, for instance, and I was asked to be on the Cultural Trust Board and on the City Theater Board, and so, you know, I've been active in all kinds of things here in town.
And what cultural event or outing doesn't go good with wine?
Right, you know? Right.
I think it's a beautiful marriage.
I would serve it during the performances.
You're full of great ideas. I mean, somebody should be writing this down.
Well, it also would boost the carpet cleaning business, too.
Yeah, right? Oh, they'd be behind you. See, you could run for office. You know who to appeal to. Now, how can we get involved in the wine festival this year? It's coming up this week. Tickets still available?
Tickets are available. You go to PittsburghWineFestival.com, and it will explain what wines are being poured, what the timings are on different things, and there are really two ticket sizes. One's a VIP ticket, which allows you to come in at 5 and leave at 9, and is the first 2 hours of that, they're pouring some wines that they're not pouring the rest of it. And the second ticket is 7 to 9, and that's called the Grand Tasting. The VIP is $250, the Grand Tasting is $125. So, but they're both listed online. And someone asked me one day if this was a little expensive, and I said, well, we haven't changed that price in 12 years. I would invite you to go look at what we're pouring and look at what the Wine Spectator is pouring in New York, and it's $1,200 to go there.
Right. And 600 wines.
Yeah, if you go to the right tables, you get that back pretty quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I don't know how many of you keep Chateau Margaux in the basement, but you ought to let her out every now and then. So
yeah,
this is a good chance to try it.
So what is your advice upon arrival? You know, there you walk into the center, there's 600 wines tasting. Where do we begin? What's the process?
Well, I think you begin on the internet with the website, and you look at what's being poured. Now, if you're knowledgeable about wine, you quickly show maybe 10, 12 tables you want to go to. And so you focus on that. If you're just learning, this is a great place to learn because
sure.
of the variety being offered. I would look at, if I were just learning about it, I would look at what's being poured and start writing and just take different varietals, Chardonnay, Cabernet, Sauvignon Blanc, Champagne, whatever. Look at each one and decide, okay, I'm going to try one of each of these and select it. And whatever's left over is, let's go.
Now, what's your limit? About how many glasses before you start getting wild or anything?
Well, you know, people who are trying wine with the possibility of buying it, and buy a fair amount of it, we don't swallow.
That's right, the spit buckets.
There are spit buckets there.
I've always wondered about, like, who doesn't want to drink it?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that I'm not spitting out a taste of Aubryon.
Okay. Right, yeah. There's no bucket at that table.
Well, it might as well not be. But, you know, the idea of if tasting, taste is so tied to smell that you really swirl it around your mouth, get air over it, and spit it out, and you'll get all the flavor that you have gotten from tasting. Now you won't get the buzz, but you know, that's part of the issue here.
Define buzz. What are we talking about?
I can define it because we really are careful with this. I warn you, I have plainclothes guys out there. If you really get messy, we will ask you to take a cab home.
And everybody's out by 9, right? We gotta wrap it all up by 9 p.m.
And please don't ask the guy who's been pouring to give you the bottle. You can't take it out, it's illegal.
Well, okay.
But every year people get upset because they can't take the bottle out, so.
Good to know. These are good things. This is the checklist.
You know, you know, it's just, it is there for the purpose of tasting. I'm not going to tell you that I don't have 5 or 6 glasses or... You know, the other thing is it's not a glass. It's about an ounce of wine.
Right.
So it's not, you know, it would probably take quite a few for you to really be out of control. But
now, who are some of this year's heavy hitters? Like the wines that are, you know, irresistible, must tries?
Well, there's some of the usual suspects. From Australia, there are a couple of them that you just have to try. And if you go to that table, there's nothing on that table you shouldn't try. Most of the French wines that we have are just amazing this year. And they'll be some of the best Bordeaux's and I happen to be a fan of Bordeaux because it's a blend that I think really works, and I go there frequently just to see how the grapes are doing. But
drink some wine!
And drink some wine, yeah. And I have friends there at this point. Champagnes are something that, we always have a good mix of champagnes. And I don't want to cut out American wines because I think that America has done a great job of really improving its wine industry. The Oregon Pinot Noirs are maybe not as good as Burgundy, but darn near at this point. And some of the Russian River Pinot Noirs in California are the same. Argentina and their Malbecs are quite amazing wines.
I think,
and we're not talking something you have to pay $200 a bottle for. You can get a very fine Argentine Malbec for $25 and under. And they're making some of the best in the world. So I think you really... People always ask me, what is good wine? What should I buy? And I always say, it's what you like.
Right.
Because it really is distinct matter of palate. If you don't like it, it's bad wine. Don't buy it.
I like it. That's
really
very fair.
Seriously. I mean,
that's very fair.
I drink wine at almost every price line. I've been fortunate enough to be invited to houses that have deeper pockets than I. And so I've drunk some of the world's best wines, but... it isn't what I buy.
So where do your tastes lie? A dry red, a sweet white? What do you prefer? All of the above. Right?
Actually, my favorite, I think, is Pinot Noir, and out of that, the Burgundies. And the whites, I like a good French-made white. California Over Oaks their Chardonnay, for instance, for my palate. But there are people who love an oaky Chardonnay.
Yeah, that's what I hear both.
It really is distinctive. We don't probably eat the same food. Why should we drink the same wine?
Indeed.
You know? Or you like Burger King and I like McDonald's, something like that. Whatever.
Not to put too fine a point
don't
on
be,
it.
Don't laugh now. McDonald's serves wine in France.
What?
Yes.
Oh. Well, America hasn't caught up to everything.
No, yet, this is true.
I like a dry red, and you know what always impresses me is any Shiraz that comes from the Barossa Valley in Australia. Always.
Marvelous Shiraz.
That's where my heart lies.
Yeah, well, and you don't pay a king's ransom for it either.
Right.
Yeah, and my point, which is there's wonderful wines out there that are just not crazily priced.
What do we have here?
Well, we're drinking a Barolo here. Mm. This is an Italian wine. Grape that I happen to like. But
Now, what we didn't film is when we started, both our glasses were up here.
Well, we can't tell all our secrets, can we?
No. So I'll make sure to edit that out. But this is how a red wine should be poured, not full, you know, in the bulb, so that you you can get some of the aroma.
You're about to make some of the wine aficionados get very nervous and upset. Put your glass back down. Because you pick it up by the stem.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, your hand warms it.
Well, I thought that was okay for reds, though.
Not really.
Really? Okay. Because it's at the temperature that it should be. No warmer, no cooler.
Right.
I learned something here with you today, Ed. I did.
We're at the wine festival this year. We're doing sort of a practice for next year. There's a program on PBS called Vine Talk. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but the format is that they have some celebrity tasters, and then they have about 30 or 40 people from the audience who taste the same wines. None of them know what they're drinking, and they rate it. And it's interesting because the experts almost never pick the same wine as the regular guys. And neither of them, it's a very rare thing that either of them pick the most expensive.
We're all different.
Yeah.
Our taste buds are all different. Exactly. So I think you're right on when you say, what's a good wine? The wine that you like.
So at 7 o'clock, we're going to do a practice run of this. We have Ray Eisel, who's the wine editor of Food & Wine magazine.
Wow.
He'll be here. He'll be the moderator. And we have... Nancy Pelosi from WQED, and we have Chris Fenimore, and we have David DeSimone, who's a wine critic for the Tribune Review, mm-hmm. and owns a restaurant, Open Bottle, in Shadyside, and we have Anthony Rapp.
Hey, wonderful.
Who's the star of Rent. He just stopped, he just went off a show, If Then, that was... He was a co-star with Idina Menzel in that show. So he's Anthony, loves Pittsburgh. Some of you will remember that he, years ago, before it became really popular, he did Hedwig and the Angry Inch at City Theater.
Oh, yes.
So he will be there. And it's going to be a fun thing, and people can stop and watch what they're doing. And then next year, we will repeat it. It might not be the same people, but we will repeat it, and it'll be filmed, and we'll go as part of the syndicated program, Vine Talk.
Wow, wonderful.
So
this is great.
A little more exposure for Pittsburgh.
I'm glad to see it's growing, so we're looking forward to it. We can get our tickets online, well worth the price, by the
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
And be exposed to wines from all around the world.
And I'll guarantee you they're all of a very high quality. We do watch it, you know.
Bravo.
Well, it's not price that determines that.
Right. Well, we thank you for bringing us this festival, keeping it going. Cheers to you and all that you do. We're looking forward to seeing you there.
Thank you.
Indeed.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.